So we're talking about Parshas Bamidbar, and Rabosai, as you know, one of the main elements in Parshas Bamidbar is the process of choosing the Levim. And as we'll soon see, the Levim were broken down into three different groups, and we're going to be very sensitive, number one, to the way the Torah presents, in what sequence does the Torah present those three groups, who's first on the list, you know, who's get first dibs. And this is going to hopefully give us a little bit of an insight into what it means to be a Jew, and specifically what it means to be a leader amongst Jews. So we have Shevet Levi. We know that Shevet Levi plays a very important role in the Mishkan, and they're in charge of what's called Avodas Masa. They have to carry the various parts of the Mishkan. We'll see how to subdivide the parts of the Mishkan into three. And the Torah says the following, right here at the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar. It says, Vaydaber Hashem al Moshe lemar. And I think I have a chumash floating around too. If you want to take a look, Avram, you be my chumash man today. And in Perek Gimel, starting with Pasuk Hey, Hakrev es matei Levi, ve'amadeta oso lifnei Aaron haKohen v'sharso so. So Hashem commands Moshe to bring the Shevet Levi closer to Aaron haKohen. And what function, what responsibility is going to be placed on their shoulders? Number one, v'shamru es mishmarto. It means they're in charge of protecting and circling the Mishkan to make sure that everything is going well. And not only that, the Torah says, la'avod, what is their avoda? Oh, come in, Gershon, you could join us. I have a copy for you over there. And the Torah goes on to, if you fast forward to Perek Dalid, Pasuk Beis, it says, first, the first group that's mentioned amongst the three groups of Levi is Kahas, who is the son of Levi, and the Torah says, Nesoes Rosh B'nei Kahas Mitoch B'nei Levi, which means to elevate the children of Kahas amongst the children of Levi. He gets sort of first dibs, a higher status. And L'mishpachosam L'beis Avosam, the Torah goes on to say that the responsibility that's placed on the shoulders, and I mean here literally the shoulders, not figuratively, but literally on the shoulders of the Bnei Kahas, is to carry, number one, the Aron HaBris, that has in it the Luchos, number two, the Shulchan, number three, the Menorah, and number four, the Mizbechos, and number five, all the Klei HaMishkan. Now again, you might ask me, why do we have to single out all these if we have a general halach of Klei HaMishkan? So the answer to this question is somewhat complicated. I'll just touch on it. And as it turns out, there's a fundamental difference between all Klei HaMishkan and Shulchan and Menorah and Mizbeach, those three. We'll leave out the Aron for a minute. What's unique about Shulchan, Menorah, and Mizbechos, which doesn't apply to the balance of Kli Mishkan, is that these three have to be what's called Kavua Bimkomam. They have to be set in a certain place in what's called the Heichal, or in the case of the Mizbeach Achitzon, in the Azorah, but they must be set in their place. They're not movable. The only exception to movable, where we allow movable, is Dafka during this period of time, the 40 years in the Midbar, when there was Masos, and the Mishkan was taken apart and put together, and it was on a journey, then you move the Shulchan and the Menorah Mizbechos. So for example, if I would ask you today, is there a mitzvah today incumbent upon the Levim to carry the Shulchan, the Menorah, and the Mizbeach, what would be your answer?
No,
absolutely not. But in the case of the Aron, we have a different situation. The Aron, it does not have to be Kavua Bimkomo. In fact, who remembers when the Aron was taken out of the Mishkan?
For war.
Exactly, for war. The Aron, by even so, Aron was taken out to war. And that's true even after they entered into Eretz Yisrael, and even after the Beis HaMikdash was built. So therefore, the moving of the Aron and to transport the Aron, which in this case is a responsibility incumbent upon the, as I said, literally the shoulders of the Levium, in this case Bnei Kos, that is a mitzvah for all generations. And that's true also for the Klei Shareis, because the Klei Shareis are movable. They don't have to be kavua b'mkoman.
So which were three? The menorah, the shulchan,
and... So the menorah, the shulchan, and the mizbeach have to be kavua b'mkoman. You can't, once it's moved out of its place, it loses what's called a shame shulchan. Again, this is a long discussion. I'm just sort of giving you the tip of the iceberg since we touched on it. Okay. Now, after the Torah mentions the responsibility incumbent upon the B'nai Kahas, it goes on to mention what's called the B'nai Gershon. That's the second group, another son of Levi. And their responsibility is to transport the Urios HaMishkan, all sorts of covers over the Mishkan, the Michsa Tachash. And then finally, at the end of the parasha, we're going to get to the B'nai Merari, and their responsibility is to carry the crushim, how do you say in English, crushim, the boards, the boards of the Mishkan. Now, what we're going to study today sounds like a secondary question, a technical question, but it really opens up a whole world, and we'll see how primary it is.
And all these three sons of Levi?
These are all three sons of Levi.
Only the first one is actually called son of Levi.
Well, no. If you go back to the end of Sefer Breishit, if you don't mind opening up to Perek Mem Vav of Sefer Breishit,
I was just saying over here, and he just
is, that's not my focal point for today. If you, Avram, ask me this question later, because I'm going to assume right now, as I think it's pretty explicit in Breishit Mem Vav. If you don't mind opening up to Breishit Mem Vav or Gershon, maybe you don't mind doing it. Excellent.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Now, what's important here? If you have that pasuk, don't lose that pasuk.
Okay.
In Breishit, keep it open. What page is it on in the blue chumashim? The big blue chumashim.
What pasuk is it exactly?
Yud Aleph, number 11. Okay. So it's 41:11.
Page 113. Mem Aleph Yud Aleph Rabbah.
Yeah. Mem Vav Yud Aleph. Page 113. If that's easier for you, Gershon. So who's listed first, my friend? Gershon. Why is Gershon listed first? He's the eldest. And it's fascinating that although Gershon is the eldest, here in Parshas Bamidbar, Gershon is listed second and not first. Who's listed first?
Kohat.
Now Kohat is younger than Gershon, and yet he's given top bid here over here, top billing, I guess you'd say.
Rabbi, weren't Moshe and Aharon descended from Kohat?
Yeah. Yes. We're going to get to that too. Excellent. Now, the Medrash asks the following question: Ma ra Kodesh Baruch Hu? Why did Kodesh Baruch Hu be makdim? He gave priority to Kahas before Gershon, who's the Bechor. And the answer to this question, which you'll see if you're looking at the text, and I think I have a copy for you somewhere floating around, but I don't see it now. Oh, here it is. You know, just in case you want to see it, you know, Oseos Machakimos, it's in the middle column in bold, like about six lines from the top.
Naso.
You have it? Naso is Rosh B'nei Gershon. So the Medrash points out here, and the one who emphasizes this Medrash is called the Shnei Luchot HaBrit, otherwise known as the Shalah. By the way, he became famous yesterday.
Yeah.
No, I'm just joking. Because yesterday a lot of people read the Tefillah HaShalah. I don't know if you read it for Rosh Chodesh Sivan. Anyway, the Shalah says the following, that the Pasuk in Mishlei tells us that what's most beloved is the Torah itself. That's called Yakara He. The word He is referring to the Torah itself. Mi Pninim, from the most expensive pearls. V'chol chafatzech lo yishru, but nothing could compare to it. And this pasuk is a remez, an allusion to Kahas. Why? Because even though Gershon is the Bechor, and the Bechor always gets first kavod, the exception to this rule is right here in Parshas Bamidbar, where Kahas gets the first billing. And that is because he was Toen Ha'aron. He was in charge of this great responsibility of carrying the Aron. And what was in the Torah?
That begs the question.
Exactly. Oh, Michael, give me just 1 second, and then what I was going to do pedagogically is I was going to present this thesis, and then I was going to ask you, so somebody come up with a kasha, but you already came up with a kasha even before I finished the thesis. And his thesis is that since the responsibility of Kahas is absolutely special, because he's going to be the one who's carrying the Torah itself, because the Luchos HaBris that are contained in the Aron are the Torah, therefore the Torah puts him first above Gershon. And therefore first Pasuk says Nesoas Rosh Pnei Kahas, and then only then it says Nesoas Rosh Pnei Gershon. So Michael comes and asks the question. Ira, you were going to ask the question too.
I was going to ask a different question. All gracious is that the first son never gets it. I mean,
right.
Right, it's all gracious. I mean, you know, like Hevel gets it over Cain. Yeah,
it's not
Moshe,
no.
Yeah.
Right.
Moshe
are
themselves.
But
I'll tell you the truth. Although, Ira, you're right, but here's the rule of thumb. The rule of thumb is that whenever the Torah gives you genealogy, the oldest is going to come first. When the Torah speaks about kavod, then we analyze the following question: is the Bechor worthy of his kavod? Meaning, there is a din of kavod for the Bechor. In fact, initially, the avodas hakarbonos was not incumbent upon the Kohen; it was incumbent upon the Bechorim. We had a long discussion about that on Sunday. And if the Bechorim mess up in some way, or if somebody becomes, shall we say, superior, then he, so to speak, takes over the Bechor, not genealogically, but in terms of kavod. So what we're saying here is that although Gershon genealogically will come first, and if you don't believe me, look at page, what was it, 113, mm-hmm. right? What page, what number was it?
113.
115?
113.
And you'll see that the Torah lists Gershon before Kahas. Here, all of a sudden, when it came to the kavod of the Avodas Hamasa, Kahas comes first. Apparently he deserves a greater kavod. So the Shalom points out, based on Chazal, that he deserves a greater kavod because he gets the kavod of carrying the Torah. And Yikari Himi Pninim. Okay, but what question should we ask now? Michael already asked the question.
Why doesn't
kavod naturally goes to the Bechor, why not give Gershon, who's the Bechor? Okay, Gershon, don't get insulted.
The prime job.
Give him the pride and job. Okay.
Well, maybe he was more worthy. I mean, the sense that Yaakov was more worthy than Esau, etc.
So the whole thrust of our learning today, Ira, is to try to figure out why Kahas is more worthy than the others. That's the subject of that today. If I had to give a title to our learning today, it would be, why is Kahas more worthy?
I'll throw out a question, Rabbi. I mean, where did Korach come from? Was he a Ben Gershon? Or Ben Merari? Kahas?
He also claimed worthiness as a Ben Kahat, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, he was a Ben Kahat. Okay.
Yeah, you have to check out the first Rashi in Korah, if you don't mind, as we speak.
Were they sure they were in Mitzrayim also? Were they in Mitzrayim, these three?
Oh, that's a fascinating question. The question is, when were they born? Okay, right. So Rabosa, you're asking all the great questions, but I can't answer them all. You know, I'm just, unfortunately, I'm not capable until we go through all your questions are mamish beautiful, and we say tzumzach in Yiddish, meaning to the point. Lanakuda. But we'll get to it in Mirzah. Okay. So now we're looking at a piece which is written by the Or HaChaim HaKadosh. Does anybody remember when he lived and where he lived, just out of curiosity?
In Baghdad, right?
Well, maybe he was born in Baghdad. It's possible. But he lived out his life where? I'm going to go like this.
Tzfat,
exactly. And you can still visit today his synagogue in Tzfat. His name is Rav Chaim Ben Attar. They claim he was a miracle maker. And again, this is somebody who lived 5 centuries ago, and they say, for example, there was an earthquake. You know, Tzfat got bad with earthquakes throughout history, and there's an earthquake, and he told the people in his shul, who had no clue that the earthquake was coming, to move over to one side of the synagogue, and the earthquake completely split the synagogue down the middle, according to legend, I can't testify, and the entire half of the synagogue was destroyed. No one was hurt.
Wow.
Anyway, he's a very holy person. That's why they call him Or HaChaim HaKadosh. That's part of his appellation, part of his description. And he writes the following, that what was unique about Kahat why were they zocher that the Torah, meaning the in this case the Arona Brit, would be their unique, exclusive responsibility? No one else amongst the Bnei Aaron would be responsible for the Aron that contained the Torah. Why were they chosen? And he says the following, and you'll see this in bold print towards the bottom of the middle column, and he says that the reason for this is because the Gershon was, although Gershon was the Bechor, Hashem chooses Kohas, Kimimenu Yatsa Or Li Olam Moshe V'Aaron. So at this point, Gershon, what you said is now becomes very relevant, that Moshe and Aaron are born to Kohas. Okay, that's what I call a knapeteretz. You know what I'm saying by knapeteretz? It's a half of an answer. We're going to give Kohas the responsibility of Torah, because Moshe Rabbeinu, who's the giver of the Torah, who's the son of Amram, and Amram is the son of Kohas, so Kohas is Moshe Rabbeinu's Zeda, therefore Bnei Kohas are going to be given the Avodas Ha'aron, the carrying of the Aron. Okay, it's a half of an answer, but hopefully we're going to get the other half as we go along. And now this is the only part, Michael, of this presentation that's a little bit, I wouldn't call it Kabbalistic, but it's more in the level of remez. You know what I mean by remez? Meaning it's something that's hidden in the Torah. It's not revealed, and that's the Chasam Sofer. The Chasam Sofer says that if you take Levi, and then you go down to his son Kohas, and then you go down to his son Amram, and then you focus in terms of Torah on Moshe Rabbeinu, you take the first letter in these four words, then if you juggle them, like Scrabble, what do they call it?
Boggle,
Scraggle, or Scrabble, then you get Amalek, which means that the power to fight against Amalek is inherent in these four people, Levi, Kohas, Amram, Moshe. And not only that, Amalek themselves are imbued with an agenda. This is what they want to destroy. They want to destroy Levi, Kohas, Amram, Moshe. And where does the Chasam Sofer see this in the Torah? The Torah says, and this is towards the end of Sefer Bamidbar, in a parasha called Balak, when Bilam, if you recall, foretells the future at the end of days. He says about Amalek, as he looks at Amalek, you know, he's holding on to his staff, you remember. He says, Reishis goyim Amalek, vachriso ade ovet. There are two parts to this pasuk. The first part is sort of like praising Amalek, so to speak, building him up. He's called Reishis goyim, he's the head of all the nations. And the second part is more of a consolation for us in terms of what's going to happen to Amalek at the end of days. But he says, in the name of someone, he doesn't remember who he heard it from. That's very unusual in the case of the Chasam Sofer. He didn't forget anything. But in any event, he says that he heard from some Chacham who remained anonymous, that the first letter in each of these names, Levi, Kohas, Amram, and Moshe, form the word Amalek. And that's called Reishis Goyim Amalek. Why? Because amongst the Shvatim, he says the Reishis, the most important leadership of the Shvatim, lies in this lineage that begins with Levi, goes to Kohas, down to Amram, and finally ends at Moshe. And that's called the Reishis of Klal Yisrael. Okay? That's the Reishis of all the Shvatim of Klal Yisrael. And he tells you to take a look, if somebody could, because I didn't get a chance to open up Rashi, in Brachos Lamed Hay, that's 35, Brachos Lamed Hay, verse 11, Pasuk Yud Aleph. Again, please hold on to that Rashi for a minute if you found it. I'm going to just finish the Chasam Sofer. And therefore, the power invested in Amalek, because as you know, everything in the Kedusha, the sanctified part of the world, has its antithesis, its adversary in the Tumah part of the world. So if the greatest of all the Shvatim, the most important of all the Shvatim, is this connection, this ancestry from Levi down to Moshe, and that represents the Torah, then Amalek is the Reishis Goyim to battle against this Kedusha, to fight against the Torah, and that's what they want to do. Does anybody remember in the parish of Amalek in Beshalach, when Amalek comes to attack the people of Israel, Michael, you remember?
Yes, when they're
with a car, with a coal. Oh, that's true too. But in terms of the location, you remember the name of the location where they attack Chlaisel Rafidim? And what does Rashi say in the name of Chazal? Sherafu Yideya Minatorah. So a lot of Chag HaShavuos has to do with anti-Amalek, because Amalek attacks us when we're weak in the study of Torah. In other words, the antithesis to Torah in this world that God created is Amalek. So Amalek becomes the Rashis Goyim, whereas Levi, Kohas, Amram, and Moshe become Rashis Shivtei Yisrael, that's Torah. But the consolation is in the end of the Pasuk of Bilam, and there he says, Vachriso Adei Oved, which means literally that at the end of time, Amalek will be destroyed. And he says that that's also hinted in these four names of the Roshei Shvatei Yisrael. You take Levi, Kohath, Amram, and Moshe. And if you boggle or joggle together the Sofei Tevos, then it's the last letter, which is Yud, Tav, Mem, and Hey, you get Misa, which means destruction. So ultimately, Amalek will be destroyed. And this is all based on the Vilna Gaon, which I'm not going to go through now simply because of the time pressure, but if you take a look at the paragraph on the left column in the middle, and if you get a chance to go through this, you'll see that the basis for the Ksam Sofer, in terms of the insight that he has to Amalek attacking, as it were, Levi, Kohath, Amalek, and Moshe, who represent the Torah, that's the chosen Shvatim, is written here already in the Vilna Gaon, who was about, I would say, a century before the Ksam Sofer.
I thought that the people who are going to destroy Amalek are the descendants of Rachel, Yosef and Binyamin.
Again, you're raising another question which is not particularly relevant to us. In other words, we're not saying that the Shevet Levi is going to be in charge of destroying Amalek. That's not what his intention is. What he's saying is that Shevet Levi represents the antithesis of Amalek, or on the flip side, Amalek represents the antithesis of Shevet Levi. But the good news is that although they will attack the Jewish people, as you'll see in the next to last paragraph, which you didn't get to, when we are weak in the study of Torah, in other words, if we're not dedicated to Levi, Kohath, Amram, and Moshe, that tradition, then that's when Amalek becomes empowered with a tremendous force to attack the Jewish people. But the good news is, the consolation prize is, that at the end of days, they, Amalek, will suffer total destruction. And that's called Misa. He's not entering into the question, who will be the vehicle or the agent to bring about the destruction of Amalek. That's not what he's talking about, but that ultimately the power of Torah, of the Rashis Shvatim, which is Levi, Kohath, Amram, Moshe, will succeed in winning out, and Torah will be victorious against its adversary, which is Amalek. Now again, Rabbi Osei, if we had time, we would have to try to figure out, what does this mean in contemporary life? You know, who is the real Amalek in contemporary life? Are they down south here, if you know what I mean? Are they up north? Are they in Europe somewhere? You know, there are many, many different candidates for Amalek in our time. Unfortunately, there are too many.
The answer, unfortunately, is yes to all of them. Right?
Yeah, probably they all belong to some... But right now, our only hope is that they're split, you know, that they're not unified. Once they all get together, we're in deep, deep trouble, Chas v'Shalom. Anyway, now we say the following. Levi is the first one on this group, correct? He's the Alter Zeder, we'd say, the great-grandfather of Moshe Rabbeinu. Does he represent Torah? Is he dedicated to the study of Torah? So for that, I want you to flip the page to the other side, and he quotes the Rambam, very famous Rambam at the beginning of Hilchas Akum, and the Rambam says that Yaakov Avinu received the Torah from his father Yitzchak, and now Yaakov has 12 children. He's got to choose one of them to be the Rosh Hashiva, to be in charge and responsible for what we call the Mesores, the transmission of the Torah. Which one of his 12 Shvatim, his 12 sons, does he designate? Levi. You guessed it, Levi. I don't know how you guessed it. the subject of that lecture is Levi, so if I ask any questions, probably Levi's a good shot at the answer. And that's what the Rambam says, that he chose Levi, and Siva es barach shalo yafsiku mibnei Levi, and he commanded, so to speak, Levi, that the Torah should be constantly and continuously passed on, transmitted through Levi and his descendants. He's Mamuna. He is one who's in charge of Torah. He's the one who has to guarantee that the Torah will never be interrupted. The transmission will continue. Kedei shelo tishachach halimut, so that the content of Torah would never be forgotten. And again, Rabbi said, this is way before Matan Torah, but there's a Torah that's given from Avraham Avinu. You may remember HaNefesh Asher Asu B'charan. Avraham Avinu had a myriad numbers of Talmidim, and he passed on the Torah. Then he was Moshe of Yitzchak, and then Yitzchak was Moshe of Yaakov as the Rosh Yeshiva, and finally Levi. So therefore Levi represents the Shevet that's dedicated to Torah. Now what happens when we go down to Mitzrayim? What happens to the children of Levi? Are they part of the slavery?
No.
Again, how this works, I don't know. I mean, that's another shia in itself. But somehow Levi is free of the burden of work, of the terrible subjugation of Malacha. And as such, you know, you could have expected that Levi would spend most of their time sunning themselves. I heard that in Cairo you get some very good sun, I was told. And instead, what are they doing? What is Levi busy with? They are busy with studying the Torah. And now we have to ask, what happens with Kahas? Kahas is one of the children of Levi. Levi has three sons. And now Kahas is singled out to carry on the responsibility of Torah. Levi was the first. Now it goes on, it's passed to Kahas. And then from Kahas it goes on to Amram. And the Gaon says about Kahas and Amram that these were the greats in their generation. Kahas haya mufchar shebeshevet Levi. That's the Gaon's language. And Amram was the Gadol Hador. In other words, among Shevet Levi, who is the choice of all the children of Levi? It was Kahas in the first generation. Now we go to the next generation. I guess you call it the third generation. Amram is already considered the Gadol Hador. This is a Gemara in Sota. The Gemara says about Amram, he's the Gadol Hador. And you remember, of course, how he set the pace for the entire generation. They looked up to him and they imitated him. And finally, the fourth generation, who's the Achron Chaviv, the most beloved of them all, is Moshe Rabbeinu, who's the greatest of all our prophets. There's no one as great as he is in Torah and in sanctity. And we begin to understand that Amalek is now trying to get its yenika. You know, everything that's evil in this world has to somehow, again, this is more of a Kabbalistic idea, has to get a yenika, it has to nourish itself and find its sustenance from something of Kedusha that it's going to attack. And that's going to be Amram, Moshe, Levi, Kahas, which means Amalek. And that's what Amalek is going to attack. And he's going to attack them in Rephidim when they're rough for Yudim, they're weak in the study of Torah. But ultimately, their destiny is destruction. Now, how did Levi choose the names of his children? We started with the Or Chaim HaKadosh. We want to continue with the Or Chaim HaKadosh. The Or Chaim makes a big deal about the fact that Levi chose names that were based on Shibud Mitzrayim. Okay, give me a few minutes to try to develop this idea. The suffering of the Jewish people under the subjugation of Mitzrayim and the exile of Mitzrayim is going to be the justification or the motivation for Levi to choose the names respectively of his three sons. Now, if you take a look, if you could open up back in Sefer Shmos to Perek Vav, Pasuk Yudalit. Okay, so that's Shmos chapter 6, verse Yudalit. I'm only saying that to give you time to open up the Chumash. So that's like a little bit of a filler there. And you tell me what page it is in the blue Chumash.
Shmos what?
Shmos 6, number 14. Okay, what page is that on?
139.
139? 139. That makes a lot more sense. because before we were in Shmo at the end of Bereishis and it was 1:13. So it says over there, watch the language of the Pasuk. Who could notice a problem in the Pasuk? There's a lack of symmetry here, so to speak. There's something that has to be reconciled. It says, Ela Roshe Beis Avosam, and it goes on to say, B'nei Ruvain, etc., B'nei Shimon, and then it says, V'Ela Shmos B'nei Levi. What's missing in the first part of the presentation of the Torah that appears in the second part? Which word?
Shmot.
Right, exactly, the word Shmot. And the Archaim HaKadosh wants to understand why is it that when it comes to the names of the children of Levi, the Torah went out of its way deliberately to add the word Shmot, apparently telling us that there's something very unique and significant about the names of the Bnei Levi. And he says the following, Shevet Levi did not suffer during the Shibud of Mitzrayim. Rashi already mentions it earlier in the same context, but this time in Perek Hey of Shmos, that Melech HaShibud Mitzrayim Lohois al Shevet Levi. And nevertheless, despite the fact that Levi were completely free of this tremendous burden of Shibud Mitzrayim, nevertheless, what's great about Levi, and here in the middle column you want to underline the following words, Ratza, on the top line in the middle column, Ratza lishtatef bitzaras hatzibur. What do those four words mean? Because that's the key of keys. Ira, this is going to hopefully answer that question.
Where's that located?
The middle column, on the top line, towards the end of that line, underline, V'rotza lishtatef bitzaras hatzibur.
Oh, they ran to participate in the woes of the community.
Correct. This is what we call empathy in English. Are you familiar with that word?
Moshe, correct.
And this is all going to be because Moshe has the genes of whom? Of Levi, of his Alta Zeda, his great-grandfather. Levi is the one who sets the tone. And where do we see, and what? How does this express itself that Levi identifies and empathizes with the Tzar of the Tzibur? He was actually free of the work, and yet he names his three children, and let's go through the three names. Gershon is Gerim Heim Ba'aret Shalom Lahem, they're in exile. Kahas is Shinam Chaos, means the work was so difficult, so backbreaking, that their teeth were shattering, so to speak, or shuddering. And finally, Merari is Vayamaru Eschayem, the bitterness of their life. Why is Levi, normally, who wants to choose a name for that child that's identical, that is reminiscent of tsaris, of suffering? And there's a whole thing, by the way, now I don't want to get off on a tangent about whether you name a child after someone who suffered and died. You know, there's a whole to-do about that. Usually they ask you to change the name and drop or add another name, whatever it is. And Levi, of all people, steps forward. He's not included in the Shibud. But the answer is, Lishtatef Bitzaras HaTzibur. He wants to identify and commensurate and empathize with the Tzar of Klal Yisrael. This is the key of keys for our whole discussion today. Because, okay, here's what we have to sort of polish up a little bit, fine tune. How old was Levi? Well, no, that's not the way I want to ask the question. Let me see if I can ask you. This is a quiz question. Okay? How long was the Shibud going on during the type of time of Levi such that he would have named his three sons after the Shibud Mitzrayim? What's the answer to that question?
96.
Zero. Absolute zero. In other words, Levi doesn't overlap at all with the Shibud.
Wasn't the clock running, Rabbi?
Well, I don't know what you mean by the clock running, but Rashi says
400 years.
But again, but I'm talking about the Shibud. You know, we're talking about the suffering of Klal Yisrael.
Where they all passed away.
Take a look, Shmos Vav. Again, if you have a chance, you'll tell me what page it's on. Chapter 6. Again, I'm going to repeat it. Mm-hmm. Chapter 6. And we're looking at verse number 16, Tes Zion. Can anybody tell me what page it's on?
139.
The Torah describes the years of Levi's life. Rashi asks the question, if you take a look at Rashi, it should be on the bottom of your page there. Why did the Torah count the years of Levi's life to tell us that Kol Zman She'echad Min HaShvatim Kayom, that as long as any one of the Shvatim are alive, who is the last Shevet of the Yud Bei Shvatim to die? Who lived the longest time in terms of the clock? I'm not saying how many years he lived, but
maybe Levi.
It was Levi. It was only when Levi died, because the pasuk says Vayomas Yosef v'Kol Echav. Kol Echav means all the Shvat, and then it says Vayokam El Chadash. The entire subjugation began, says Rashi, only after the death of Levi. He was the last of the 12 tribes to die. Levi Herich Yomim Al Kula. Now, here's a very strange paradox. We're saying here in the name of the Shallah that the greatness of Levi is that he chooses names that describe and identify with the suffering of the Jewish people. There was no suffering at that time. The Shiva only began after Levi died. And the answer is he had Nevuah, he calls it Ruach HaKodesh, that he understood that in the future the Jewish people were going to suffer tremendously in the Egyptian exile. And it's very interesting. He knew Levi in his Ruach HaKodesh that his Shevet would not be included in the Shibud. They would be dedicated to the study of Torah. He prepared his children for that task. And yet, he suffered so much anguish for something that's going to happen to the people of Israel, not to him or his descendants, but to the other Shvatim, down the line. It's going to happen in the future. He's already identifying with the suffering of the Jewish people even before it comes to pass. And that it reflects itself in the choice of names. And therefore, he quotes Rebbe Elazar Ashkenazi, one of the earlier commentaries, who says that why was it that Levi was, you know, merited to give birth to father a child like Kahas, who is such an outstanding leader in his Shevet, or Moshe Rabbeinu, who's the Goel of Klal Yisrael, he's going to redeem Klal Yisrael. Why is that so? And he says the answer is because Levi knows and feels an emotional identification and an empathy with the people of Israel, the Golus of Mitzrayim. And therefore Moshe Rabbeinu is going to be his great-grandson. And it's interesting, with regard to Reuven, Shimon, etc., it doesn't mention Shemos. It just says B'nai Reuven, B'nai Shimon. Here the Torah emphasizes Shemos, because the Torah wants to tell you about Levi, that Levi identified with the suffering, the future suffering of his people, and therefore he chose these names for all of his three sons. And this is all a remez to allude to the fact that Levi would be Zocher, that from him, from his descendants, would come the Goalim, the redeemers of Israel, not from his older brother or any of his older brothers, right, Reuben and Shimon, because Levi is the one who identifies with the suffering of Klal Yisrael. How does that impact on Moshe Rabbeinu? Who can tell me where we see the same idea in Moshe Rabbeinu? Excellent. Vayehi bayom ha'hem, the last line on your page, on page 2. Vayigdal Moshe vayetzel echav vayar besivloso. And by the way, where is Moshe? Basically. He's in the palace. He's insulated. He's like Shevet Levi in a sense. He's totally out of the Shibud of Mitzrayim. And yet it says Vayetze el Echo, Vayar Bisuvlosam. What Mao Vayar? And the Chazal tell us that not only did he see what the people, his people were suffering, his brother, but he also was Bocha, he was crying. This is going to be critical about the crying, so keep that in mind. And Moshe Rabbeinu declares, Miite Musi Aleim, I'd be willing to die in order to spare my brethren from their suffering, their sivlosam. He saw that they were working in what's called Melech HaSatit, you know, down on all fours, trying to make cement and so forth. It's the worst of all the Melechas, backbreaking. And then he pushed his shoulder to try to help each one of them. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says the following, Hinachta Iskecha, you left all your endeavors, for Alachta Liros B'Tzaron Shel Yisrael, you identified with the suffering of the people, even though you aren't suffering personally. You were an ach, you were a true brother. I'm a busy guy, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says. I got a very busy schedule, but I'm going to leave it out. I'm going to just, and this is in the third chapter of what's the third chapter of Shmos? Who knows? In one word. What is that episode? It's called the Sneh, right? The Sneh is the first time that HaKadosh Baruch Hu reveals himself and Moshe Rabbeinu encounters God, and that is a result of the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu left all his endeavors. He left the palace in order to see the suffering, identify the suffering of the people. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm going to leave all my busy schedule, leave it out. I'm going to make time for learning, for encountering Moshe Rabbeinu. And Vayikra Elov Elokim Mitoch HaSneh. Why a Sneh? Why a burning bush? Says the Medrash. The burning bush is a symbol of suffering. Ra'a Kadosh Baruch Hu b'Moshe she'masar mi'iskav liros b'sivlos l'fichach. Therefore he calls out to Hashem, he calls out to Moshe from the Sneh. Why is the Sneh? So Rashi, again you can look it up if you have a chance, in the third chapter of Shmos, the fourth pasuk, says mitoch hasneh v'lo ilan acher. Why sneh? Mishum imo anochi b'tzara. God says, I identify with the people in tzara. The greatest divine promise for the golus and the positive side and the consolation side is that God says, I'm with you in the exile. God says, Kaviyachal, I will suffer with you the bonds of slavery and exile. And that's the concept of the Sneh. And it's appropriate that Hashem, in his first presentation, his encounter with Moshe, is going to show up in a Sneh to convey to Moshe Rabbeinu that you are like this Sneh. You are a person who leaves whatever he's bothered with in order to identify with the tzar of his brethren. And therefore Moshe Rabbeinu becomes the Goel Yisrael. And if this be the case, if Moshe Rabbeinu, going back to his roots as Levi, his great-grandfather Levi, is able to commensurate and identify with the people of Israel, it makes sense that he calls his three sons, Levi, by names that reflect the suffering of Klal Yisrael. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu becomes the third generation down, meaning the fourth generation from Levi. He inherits that same trait of Levi, of caring and identifying with the suffering of the people. Therefore, he will be designated by Hashem as the Goel Yisrael. He has the same schus as his great grandfather Levi, who is mitztayer b'tzaran shel Yisrael. That is Moshe Rabbeinu. And if Moshe Rabbeinu personifies that midah, being mitztarev with a klalis of the tzar, he will be chosen as the Goel shel Yisrael. And in the middle column here on page 3, we have the Sfas Emes, who says the following on Parshas Bamidbar, our Parsha, that the Pasuk in Tehillim says, Motzi Asirim, God takes out the people of Israel, that He frees them from bondage, Bikoshros. Now, I don't have an English translation here in front of me, I should have done this before the Shia, but I think the word Koshros means some sort of a utensil that pulls something that's tied up, that's bound. But the Sfas Emes wants to take this word koshros and split it into two. Koshros is a word that's really a hybrid of two, a connection of two words. And what are those two words? So if you take a look at the first two letters of the word bikoshros, it's bechi, bet chaf yud, which means crying. The second part of the word is shin resh, which is shira, which is song. So we're going from one extreme to the other. From one expression of absolute anguish and breaking out into tears, and the other expression is joy and celebration, breaking out in song. Koshros is a word that symbolizes and represents Moshe Rabbeinu. Why? Motzi Asir B'Koshros means God will take you out of Egypt with Moshe Rabbeinu. Why is Moshe Rabbeinu Koshros? So the Pasuk says at the beginning of Shmos regarding Moshe, the little child Moshe Rabbeinu, it says, V'hine nar bocha, he's crying. And that crying of Moshe Rabbeinu is connected to what's going to happen later on in that same chapter, Shmos Beis, Vayonchu Bnei Yisrael. Bnei Yisrael are completely broken by the anguish of Shibud Mitzrayim. And ultimately, Moshe Rabbeinu represents Shira, Oz Yashir Moshe Bnei Yisrael, because Moshe Rabbeinu, in his youth, is a bocher, meaning he identifies with the Tzar and Yisrael and he cries for them. Therefore, he becomes zocher to the Shira of Oz Yashir Moshe at the end of his life. So Koshros starts with Bechi and ends with Shira. Those two that sandwich in, you know, bookends that represent Moshe's greatness. His greatness is that he's a bocher. Bechia always represents tefillah and za'aka. Moshe Rabbeinu cries out to the Almighty on behalf of Klal Yisrael, and in that tzchus he receives the responsibility and the great celebration of Shira, bringing about, as it were, the Geula from Mitzrayim, all because he began with Bechi, which means with identification with the Tsar of Klal Yisrael. We can begin to appreciate now the Avodas HaLeviim. The Leviim are given the responsibility of Shira, of singing in the Beis HaMikdash. Do we have any Leviim here today? No Leviim. Okay, if you're a Levi, you got to take voice lessons, because in a few manner of time, you're going to have to be singing. So let's get prepared. You know what I'm saying? My Rebbe's name was Soloveitchik. Do you know what Soloveitchik is in Polish or Russian? I don't know. It's a nightingale. A nightingale is considered a beautiful singing bird because Soloveitchiks were Leviim. So they took on the name of that bird. And he says the following, that the Leviim are given this chus, this merit of being the singers in the Mikdash, because since the Leviim were the ones who identified with Klal Yisrael, and this was embedded in the spiritual DNA structure of the Leviim and passed down through the generations, if they would be the ones who cry for Klal Yisrael, they're going to be the ones who sing in the Beis HaMikdash. And this is all a presentation of the great Hasidic master called the Sfas Emes, the Ger Rebbe. And what we derive from the Ger Rebbe is that the Leviim merited Shira al Karba on the Beis HaMikdash because they cried, they prayed, and they identified with the suffering of Klal Yisrael and Golis Mitzrayim, even though they themselves were free of this burden. And Levi, as we said before, has three sons. And he names them by expressing and reflecting his identification with the Tsar of Yisrael and Mitzrayim. And therefore, Levi is zocher to have a Moshe Rabbeinu as his descendant who's going to redeem the people of Israel. Okay. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu's role as a redeemer of Israel is only the first stage. If I had to define, you know, if you were writing a CV about Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe Rabbeinu had a CV written up, his first item would be that he was the Redeemer of Israel. What would be his second item? Probably even more important than the first.
Transmitted the Torah.
Excellent. He receives the Torah, transmits the Torah. What does this whole structure, this whole approach about the ethical significance of identifying with someone else, another brethren's tzar, what does that have to do with Torah? Torah is an intellectual endeavor, and it reflects your capability to comprehend, you know, complex and abstract ideas, and then transmit it properly to the next generation. That's Moshe Rabbeinu. Why and how is that connected?
Levi.
Right, obviously he inherits this through Levi, and that's why he's the Redeemer of Israel, and that we've gone through in great depth. But now we want to understand his second great achievement in his lifetime, in his career, and that is to pass on the Torah.
But Levi was the guardian of the Torah.
That's true.
That's the essence of Torah. Is the Hafalarecha Kamocha.
Oh, okay. Okay, Abraham, you said the whole shiur for me. That's it, I can close shop. But for those who want to just flesh it out a little bit, I'll tell you what Abraham is saying. But first, I want to point out to you that already at the Sneh, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu asks, who am I? Why do I merit to go to Paro and to redeem the people of Israel? And Hashem gives him the most odd answer. He says, Ki eyeh imach. What do you mean, eyeh imach? Moshe Rabbeinu is asking why I deserve to play that role. Why am I singled out? And Moshe said, and Hashem Zerisvat says, Eya Imach. Okay, Eya Imach, God could be with anybody. He doesn't have to be with Moshe Rabbeinu. And furthermore, in the very next pasuk in the snare, Hashem says to Moshe, Zelcha Ha'os, and he tells you about Har Sinai, meaning about Kabbalah HaTorah. Again, doesn't it's like disjointed. What's the connection? So he says the following. The Mishnah in Avos, in the last perek, which is called the perek of Kinyan HaTorah, enumerates the 48 keys to studying Torah. You used to live in the Old City, so you probably knew Rav Noach Weinberg, did you not? Don is an Old City man. And Rav Noach Weinberg wrote a whole work, and he I don't know how much he published in his lifetime, but he presented lectures upon lectures on these 48 keys to wisdom. One of them is called Nose Biol Chavero, he who shares the burden placed on his friend's shoulders. What does that have to do with Kinyan HaTorah? And the answer is that the Gemara says in Soto, what is Torah? Let's read the Torah. How does the Torah begin? How does it end? And if you read the beginning of any novel, and then you fast forward to the end, I don't recommend that, but a lot of people do it, amongst them me. I don't have time to read the whole book. And if it's a Tshuva Ravad Yosef, for sure, I just start the first paragraph, then I flip 40 pages, and I just want to know Halacha Lemaisa, what Ravad Yosef paskins. But the real scholars go through the 40 pages. But if I don't have time to go through all of the Torah, let me see what happens at the beginning of the Torah and at the end of the Torah. So this is the famous drasha of Rav Simloi in the Gemara in Sota. He says, Tchilasa, what happens at the beginning of the Torah, Vayas Hashem Elokim li'odom li'ishto kudnos ar vayal bishem. God personally weaves the begadim that Adam and Chava are going to wear. That's called chesed. And number two, the end of the Torah says vayikbar so bagai, and that's called kvuras ames. God buries Moshe Rabbeinu. That's also called chesed. And therefore, the beginning of the Torah is chesed, and the end of the Torah is chesed. That defines the essence of Torah as chesed. And therefore, amongst the 48 ways of acquiring Torah, one of them is Nose Biol Chaver, if I care and I share and identify and I empathize with your problem, then I'll become a Baal Chesed. Out of the sense of empathy, I will give to you. And the one who develops this idea beautifully is the Maharal Prague in his book, Tiferes Yisrael. We don't have time to go through this now, but if you just skim it with your eyes, you'll see that he quotes the pasuk which we recite every Friday night, Torah's chesed al lashono, that Torah is chesed and chesed is Torah. Torah is all about chesed. Even when Hashem has to mete out justice and punishment, it's out of a sense of chesed. And therefore, Rav Simloi says that the Torah begins with chesed and ends with chesed. And this leads us to what Avraham was quoting, the famous Gemara in Shabbos, about the non-Jew who comes to Hillel and says, teach me the entire Torah when I'm standing on one foot. And what does Hillel say to him after Shammai rejected him? Hillel says what? Everyone, what's the name of the guy who made a big, beautiful song out of it? Who remembers? No, you don't know it? No. It's like a modern guy. I mean, Kalbach, I don't know if Kalbach is still alive. I don't know. But I think he died. I mean, he's not. Okay, whatever. Better be careful what I say over here, because I'm a Lubavitcher Chassid, right? So, but I think Kalbach is gone. But there is a contemporary. I'm trying to remember his name. He's like a Satmar guy. It'll probably come to me as we go along. But anyway, he wrote a song called The After Rechko. It's making the rounds now.
Friedman?
Not. I think Friedman sings the song,
yeah. But
it's the originator is not Friedman. Anyway, so that's the Ahavta L'Reich Kamoch. Rabbi Akiva says, Zekhal Gadol B'Torah, wherever you look, the essence of the Torah is identified as the Ahavta, as this chesed, and identifying with your friend. That's what the Torah is all about. And therefore, Nose Ol Chavero is a precondition for Hasogas HaTorah, for achieving a level of Torah knowledge, because that's where the Torah is in its essence. It's a book of chesed from the beginning to the end. And if that be the case, we begin to understand what Hashem tells Moshe in response at the snare of Moshe's question, why am I chosen to be the Redeemer of Israel? And the answer is, I'm going to choose you based on the word Eheyeh, which we'll get to. Hashem identifies himself as Eheyeh, for the same reason I'm going to choose you down the line to be the giver of Torah. You're the Redeemer of Israel for reason X, and that same reason justifies why you merit being the transmitter of Torah. And the answer is in the word Eheyeh. What does Eheyeh mean? And Chazal say Eheyeh means that God promises that He will identify with the tzoros of Klal Yisrael throughout their history. He will be there with Israel, the Eis Tzorosam. Eheyeh Asher Eheyeh. Rashi, again, if you have time, in Perek Gimel of Shmos, Pasuk Yud Gimel 3:13, if you'll tell me what page it's on, I'll announce it. Rashi says that God's name is Eheyeh Asher Eheyeh. Says Rashi, what does that mean? Eheyeh Asher Eheyeh. Eheyeh Imam Bitsara. The Eheyeh Imam B'Shibud Shel Shar Malchus. I will be with the people of Israel and identify with them during the terrible exile in Egypt and with all future exiles. And boy, do we need that today. Hopefully God is with us, and then we're going to somehow, I don't know how, we're going to just defeat the United Nations. I don't know. And it's Eheyeh Asher Eheyeh. Hashem says to Moshe, you know why I'm choosing you? Because you embody, you personify Eheyeh Asher Eheyeh. That's your essence. Because you are Mishtatef B'Tzoros and Shel Yisrael. You are Vayetze Vayer B'Sivlosom. You leave the conference of the palace in that insulated environment to go see and identify with the Tzor of Klal Yisrael. You are the Eheyeh Asher Eheyeh personality. And if you represent that Eheyeh Asher Eheyeh, you're the Nosei B'Ol Chavero, then you deserve to give the Torah. And I'm going to give you a sign, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu at the snare. Your people that you're going to redeem will in the future down the line receive the Torah at Har Sinai. And what is the Torah? The Torah is the Torah of Chesed, Torah's Chesed al-Lashona. You, Moshe Rabbeinu, deserve to be singled out as the giver of Torah, because you personify Chesed. You are the Nosei B'ol Chaver, which is one of the key preconditions of Kinyanat Torah. And now we get back to the Mishkan that we started with, and the Avoda of the Bnei Levi of Gershon, Kahasu, Merari. The Medrash says, Bizchus, this is on page 4 on the left column, Bizchus ma yotzu Yisrael mi Mitzrayim. Why did Hashem find the people of Israel meritous for the redemption? They should suffer because Hashem saw that they in the future would build a Mishkan. And the Pasuk says, V'yedu ki ani Hashem elkech mashar tzisi oscham eretz Mitzrayim. Almenas, say Chazal, l'shachni betochnam. The whole goal and the objective and the raison d'etre of taking the people out of Mitzrayim is to build the Mishkan, v'shachanti b'socham, lo yatsu Yisrael mi Mitzrayim el b'schus ha-Mishkan. And now we begin to understand the special, unique role of the three sons of Levi, who are in charge in the Avodas ha-Mishkan of transporting the Mishkan from place to place. Why? Because they inherit from their grandfather, in this case, they inherit the Midah of Levi, of being Mishtatef B'Tzoron Shel Yisrael, and those Midos are embedded in their names. You know, in Jewish philosophy, we believe that the name is it reflects the main moral essence of a personality, and all three brothers, the sons of Levi, are given names that reflect what? Hishtatfus b'tzaron Yisrael, to identify with the suffering of Klal Yisrael. You remember that we said about Moshe Rabbeinu that he started his youth with crying and praying on behalf of the Tzara of Klal Yisrael. That is representative of Shevet Levi, and therefore, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu hearkens to the prayers of Shevet Levi and finally agrees to redeem the people of Israel from Mitzrayim, it's because he sees that down the future they're gonna build the Mishkan and bring the Shekhinah down, and therefore he appoints the three the three sons, the three members of Shevet Levi, to be in charge of the dimension of Avodas HaMishkan. Do you have page 4? Page 5. Oh, I'm sorry. So I'll just very quickly, we only have 2 minutes. Basically, the thrust of what we wanted to say, we've already said, and there's a little bit more of a discussion here about Kahas, and exactly what the special role of Kahas is, and basically I think we can sort of summarize this paragraph that we're learning is that the Shira, the song of the Karbanos in the Mishkan, was given to which Shevet? To Levi, and specifically to these three sons of Levi, because of the Midah of Bechi that we started with. You remember that we spoke about that you start with Bechi and you identify, and then you get Shira, you ultimately get the song. So the song is given to the Bnei Levi because they represent the identification with the suffering of Klal Yisrael, and therefore the Shira, which is Shevet Levi, is the end of the Bechi. You start with being Mishtatik, Bitzaran, Shal Yisroel, with Bechi, and then you end up with what? Yeah, with Simcha, Shira, with Tuv Lev, with happiness and joy and celebration. And therefore, the Bnei Kahas will receive the Avodas HaKodesh, the holiest of all of the responsibilities of Shevet Levi, Bekatef Yisoh, they will carry the Aron on their shoulders. The Aron represents Torah. And that's called, in the language of David HaMelech, Se'u Zimra Usnuk Tof. That all has to do with the Rina, the song of Torah. Torah itself is a song. And all the Asik of Shevet Levi with song is a reflection of Torah. Shevet Levi is the Shevet that designated, as we said before, in the Rambam in Hilchas Akum, for exclusive Torah study. And what they did in the Mishkan was the Shira, which represents the ultimate of Torah study. And all this is because Nose Biol Im Chavero, that Midah that penetrated into the heart and soul of Shevet Levi by Levi himself, who was a Mishtatef Bitzaren Shel Yisrael, foreseeing, as it were, the gullus and the suffering that would happen down the line, and therefore giving to his three sons that personification in the name of being Nosei B'ol Chaver, identifying with the future suffering of Klal Yisrael. That's Moshe Rabbeinu as the great-grandson of Levi. That is the exceptional role of Levi. So on the one hand, Levi is in charge of dedication to Torah, of being the Rosh Yeshiva. During Golus, they will dedicate themselves to Torah. Torah is Chesed, and at the same time, Shira, because of their identification and their prayer on behalf of Klal Yisrael, they'll be Zocha to the Shira, the song. You start with crying and you end with happiness and song. Yiratzom Epi, His will, that we take this very central message, moral message, of Parshas Bamidbar, of Shevet Levi, of the choice of Moshe Rabbeinu, both as the Redeemer of Israel and the Nosei Nat Torah, to heart. We should take it to heart because this is what Torah is all about. The precondition, as the Kinyan at Torah, is going to be Nosei Biol Chavero, identifying with our fellow Jew. Sometimes we're in situations where, you know, life is pretty easy for us. You know, some of us were born lucky, you know, with a silver spoon in our mouth, but to break through that insulated environment and identify with the suffering of others, and again, every person can do it in his own way, of the mitzvah tzedakah. You know, some people can't give tzedakah. I remember we were raising money for Yad Eliezer. I don't know how many people here know about Yad Eliezer, Avizel. And we had a fundraiser in our living room. Uri Zohar, if you know him, was the guest speaker. And my wife gets up and she says, "I want everyone here to give me 10% of their kitchens." These were all her clients, so she knew exactly what their kitchens cost. So nobody could fake her out. And we raised a lot of money at that event. And I was Zocha to connect Yad Eliezer with the Syrian community in Flatbush. Nobody knows this. I'm just telling you because you'll know it goes down in history. Because I had Debbie Sutton in my class when I invited Rav Wiesel to talk about Yad Eliezer, and her father was a lawyer who's in charge of estates. You know, an estate lawyer, we'll call him. And he, Mr. Satan, Sfaradi Tahar Satan, he was able to get an estate for Yad Eliezer. And once one Syrian recognizes the importance of a tzedakah, then all the Syrians join on board. And the Syrians most of the time raise money for their own institutions. This is a pure Ashkenazi enterprise. But I was the catalyst. But in any event, whatever your method of identifying with the suffering of others, I remember I had Talmidim who wanted to identify with Yad Eliezer. They couldn't write a check, so what they did was once a month in Yad Eliezer they give out a package. You know, I'm talking about a sal, it's called, for poor families. So the students used to volunteer once a month to do that. That's a great hishtatfus b'tzar chavero, and that's a key precondition to Torah and to geula and to redemption. It's the essence of Torah. The ahavta of Torah will be zochem ritz Hashem to the ultimate geula. Tzion b'mishpat yipadeh v'shaver b'tztaka b'mheirav yameinu ken yiratzon. Thank you very much for joining me.